Okay, good evening everybody and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Become a Brilliant Networker. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. Now in a few moments from now I'll be introducing our very special guest Stephen D'Souza, but before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour I will be asking Stephen a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of the questions will have actually been submitted in through our site by you, our listeners. Now I thought networking was a really important topic to actually feature on the People You Should Meet series, and I guess one of the real guiding principles or philosophies of the People You Should Meet program is that we are all in fact connected and we all are sharing this human experience together. And I guess one of the beautiful things about networking is it actually joins us together with other people rather than actually having us out there working in the world on our own. It actually brings and unites us. So it really is a theme that's very much aligned with the real ethos of People You Should Meet. Now actually, funnily enough, met Stephen through a networking club that I used to run here in London called Web Wednesdays. And Stephen was actually researching his book, Brilliant Networking. And through another networking organisation called Make Your Mark, he actually found my details and he got in touch. And we've been in touch ever since. And that was probably 4 or so years ago now. Now, Stephen is currently an executive fellow at the Institute de Empresa in Madrid, Spain. He has spoken at conferences and events throughout the world on subjects as wide as leadership, positive role models, diversity, networking, and organizational effectiveness. Stephen is also the author of the best-selling book, Made in Britain, which was sponsored for schools throughout the UK to inspire positive role models. And Stephen also wrote Brilliant Networking, which I mentioned earlier, which was featured in The Independent in their Success at Work series and has been recommended in The Telegraph and The Times. So he is a man with lots of experience in the whole area of networking and bringing diverse groups of people together. And it's a real pleasure to have our special guest on the call this evening, Stephen D'Souza. How are you doing there, Stephen?
Hi, Damien. I'm glad to join you and the listeners today. I'm very excited to be sharing about networking with your listeners.
Excellent. Now, Stephen, I just thought we'd actually begin just right at the very top with the whole subject of networking. I was just wondering if you could actually describe for people who may not have had a whole lot of exposure to networking what exactly it is and why it's so important in today's modern world.
Okay, I'll break that into two parts, Damien, in answering that. I think for me, in terms of researching the book and in speaking to people, I find networking is probably the most essential skill for personal and professional success. I got the privilege to meet and interview a range of people who had used networking to build new friends. Some people had used networking to start their own companies, and others to grow their businesses. So one gentleman I interviewed had grown his network, but he now had 200,000 people within his network database, which is an awesome list, really, that if he just got 1% of responses, he'd sell 2,000 of his particular product. So it's really remarkable in terms of business development. I've seen others who have used network in terms of gaining jobs and being given opportunities for promotion if they already work, already employed. So there's a whole range of different ways that people have used networking, from the personal to the professional, as I said. And some people have used networking even to find their partners and their future spouses. So this is a wide range. But when it comes to what exactly is networking, I think this is a difficult and an interesting question. And one of the things I like to do is I like to ask groups I speak to what's your emotional reaction to the word networking? What comes to mind? And often, the typical response I get is, you know, networking is manipulative. Networking is a forced conversation. Some people might say, you know, networking is about meeting new contacts. But more often than not, I get a negative reaction. And this is a consistent reaction across the board, no matter whether I'm speaking to people who are from different companies or whether I'm speaking to people who are entrepreneurs. It's always networking is a slightly negative and gives a negative reaction to the word. And I'm thinking, why is that? And one of the reasons I came across is because of the kind of people that I tended to meet at networking events. And I don't know if this rings true for you, Damien, and for the listeners as well, but I created sort of characters. They're not meant to be people that you would meet, but something about them in all of us. And the reason why I think networking gets sort of the wrong impression. So let me give you an example. One of the characters I would created that you'd meet at a networking event is a character called Marketing Martin. And this character, if you can imagine, a person with a briefcase, and the briefcase is full of widgets. Now, this person isn't trying to sell you particularly a product, although they might be, but they're trying to sell you their idea, or they're trying to persuade you, and that if you're not interested, they'll quickly leave you and walk on. Another kind of person that is a caricature of who you might meet at a networking event and get the wrong impression is a character I've called Socialite Samantha, but it could equally be Socialite Stephen. So this character is the kind of character that would go to an event, and they'd be by the buffet queue or they'd be by the drinks, but they wouldn't actually be meeting other people. They'd just be there. I don't know if you can relate to that, Damien, and just be enjoying the refreshments, but not really connecting, not really making the most of the opportunities to connect. Another type of character I met is someone I call Talking at You Terry. Have you ever met somebody and they're just doing all the talking and they don't ask you any questions about yourself? Does that ring true for you?
I've certainly experienced that, yes, at networking events, certainly.
Okay. Another one is Wallflower Wonder. Like this person, the character, somebody I've been to an event and I'm trying to make a conversation, trying to say, you know, how are you, how did you come? I get monosymbolic responses, a yes, no, but there's nothing there to engage or nothing there to really connect with that person. Now, the last character that I've created, and I want to use this as an example of networking, is someone I call Connecting Carol. And this is a true story that about 3 years ago, I was at an evening event, and it was an auction I was running for a charity called The Big Issue here in London, which sells magazines for the homeless. And I was leaving the auction at night, it was around 9 o'clock, and I heard somebody run up behind me and tap me on the shoulder. And I thought, who's this? So I turned around, and it was a woman, and her name was Carol, Carol Stone. I'm not sure if any of the listeners have heard of Carol before. But Carol said to me, I'm so sorry that I didn't get to meet you tonight. And I was thinking, that's okay, there's a few hundred people here. I don't really mind if you didn't get to meet me. And she said, is it okay if I just give you my contact and I can get in touch with you the next day? So we exchanged contacts and she got in touch with me. And she invited me to something called a salon where she gathers people from different backgrounds and industries to discuss topics of interest such as education or the environment or social entrepreneurship. And every year she has a Christmas party in which she invites her friends, and I don't know how to describe this, Damien, or whether you've been, but there'll be about 2,000 people spread over 2 nights. And literally, even though she just met you, she'll be able to say, hi, this is Stephen, and please can you meet David? David does this, Stephen does this, and I think you two should meet. So she actually pairs people effortlessly and allows them to make connections. So I use her as an example of what networking is to me. Networking isn't just about trying to persuade people, isn't just social or talking at people, but it's making valuable connections. So I'm just going to leave at this part just with what is my definition of networking, and I prefer to think about it in terms of authentic networking, and my definition is this. Authentic networking is the art of being true to your own values, beliefs, and character, while building and nurturing reciprocal relationships They help individuals or the group achieve their goals. So it's not about just getting your own way. It's about building those relationships. And Carol says it much more simply than me. Her definition of networking is the art of making friends. So I think that's really powerful because it takes away some of the negative tone, really, to networking being manipulative or networking just being about sales. Networking is the art of making friends or the art of building reciprocal relationships.
I love that definition, the art of making friends. And it was very interesting, actually, hearing all the different archetypes that you mentioned, Stephen, having run a networking club myself for probably 2 or 3 years here in London. Like, I actually did, over the course of those 2 or 3 years, did encounter all the different archetypal energies. And
yeah.
But like Carol sounds amazing, just that real energy for bringing people together and uniting people. It's a, when you meet people who have that quality, it really is very, very special.
I think it's interesting that she's now built her own business on the skills of connecting, that she runs a polling organization, which is in partnership with an organization called YouGov, which poll public opinion. But rather than just to ask people questionnaires, really getting into the heart of what does an issue mean and what does that mean to the individual. So I think one of the key things is networking can actually be your form of work. And I know many people who are professional networkers, and that's what they do as their living. And some people in some industries, I know your partner, Damien Katrina, in PR, they rely on their networks, and that's what they bring to their prospective employers or to their clients. It's something that's actually vital in some professions and can be people's occupation as well.
Absolutely. Now, Stephen, one thing that I was quite curious about, would you actually consider yourself to be a natural networker? Was it something that you instantly just knew that you were born to be a networker, or is it something that you've cultivated over time?
I think one of the things I'd like to say and that I truly believe is that we're all natural networkers and that we're natural networkers from birth, from being defenseless babies. None of us could meet our own needs. We all relied on other people to help us. And so I think networking is something that we're naturally all gifted at. But when we think of it in terms of connecting with people, speaking with groups, that's something different. And here we're going to, you know, it didn't come naturally to me. I remember when I was younger, my mother used to say, "Stephen, look up," because my eyes were always on the floor and I never had the confidence to look at people in the eye. And I don't think this changed until maybe I was around 18 and I decided to do some voluntary work and I decided, let me do this rather than go straight to university. And my choice was to work with elderly people because I thought, okay, I feel more comfortable. But instead, I was given a job as a youth leader, which was the last job on earth I wanted to do, Damien. All I could imagine was I need to be doing, you know, icebreakers and, like, doing chicken songs and I don't know, but it was a horrendous thought. I thought, I'm an introvert. I can't be doing this, you know. I prefer to be quiet. I don't like to be, you know, out there connecting people. And I was so upset. I remember just sitting on a swing in a park, and I was literally crying, and I thought, you know, what's happened here? And next to me came a woman, and she sat on the swing next to me, and she said to me, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "I'm crying because I've been asked to do youth work. I want to work with the elderly. I'm not an extrovert, and I can't relate to people." And she said to me something religious, this woman, and I wasn't not particularly religious in terms of the meaning. But she said to me, "You know, I don't understand why you're crying. Those young people are not your young people. They're not your responsibility. They're God's responsibility. So why don't you just get out of the way?" And from this, I just made a prayer, Damien, and I don't know, listeners, it's not necessary to believe in God or this belief, but my prayer was really an authentic prayer about connection. And my prayer was this: God, you know, I can't do it. These are your children that I'm connecting with. It's not my responsibility. So I ask you to connect through me. And I gave up really having to do it all myself and rather to become an empty vehicle. And at the time, I had a job as well, Damien, working in a homeless shelter in Westminster in London, where my job was to sit at the dinner table, the lunch table, and just to listen to the homeless people in the shelter that came in, and sometimes they were drunk and I was a bit afraid. And I didn't know how to react. So I made the prayer like this: God, I can't do this and I don't have the confidence, but I ask you to do it through me. Let my eyes say to them, I love you, you are beautiful. Let my smile say, I love you, you are beautiful. Let my nervousness say, I love you, you are beautiful. Let the way I hold my cutlery say, I love you, you are beautiful. You get the idea? Mm-hmm. And I didn't actually say this to them verbally, otherwise, you know, I'm sure I would have been hit. But in my thoughts, I was my whole attitude and my whole way of being changed. So rather than, I noticed what immediately dropped for me was the fear, and because I wasn't actually thinking about how are they thinking about me, what are they, you know, will I be accepted? Actually all I was thinking about was, you know, I let go of that responsibility, and I focus on, you know, loving and having an attitude of love towards those I'm relating with. And the remarkable thing was, I noticed that immediately my fear went when I was working with groups, and I was able to be really present to those I was working with in the homeless shelter. And this is something that became automatic. So I noticed that after a few years, I didn't actually need to say the prayer, although now I say it to you and to listeners on this call, but it became a way of being. But it was something that was very transformative. So the short answer to your question is, I believe we're all natural networkers, and the longer answer is that in terms of relating to people, I consider myself shy and I consider myself an introvert, but that's okay. And I think one of the common myths, and we can talk about them, is that to be a good networker you need to be an extrovert, and that's simply not true. You just need to be yourself.
Wow, so many amazing things in there, Stephen. Some of the things that really stood out for me with this whole notion of getting out of the way and just becoming this empty vehicle. I know I had a similar kind of journey around public speaking. It was something quite a few years now that absolutely terrified me. And just the mere thought of actually standing in front of an audience and presenting used to fill me with terror. And the only way I got through that terror was actually doing something very similar, but just really becoming much more focused on the audience than I was on myself. And just from what you were sharing, it seems like that's like a really useful skill as well to have in like the context of networking as well.
Yeah, it might look different for each of the listeners on your call. So people will do it in their own way. But I think it's a very powerful thing just to surrender, to say, you know, maybe you can't do it, and to allow something to happen through you. And to have the confidence that when you focus your attitude on the other person, it frees you up to be more present and to be less self-conscious in relating to the other person.
And also, like what you said about the whole concepts of introversion versus extroversion, and I know lots of people who may consider themselves to be shyer in disposition or more introverted tend to view networking events with great trepidation, and to actually hear you say that networking's for everyone, and whether you're introverted or extroverted, there is space in the space of actually coming together and uniting with people where we all can be free and present for each other.
That's right. I don't think it relies on being particularly social. People can network anywhere, and people network online. People network in lunch queues, people network in bus stops and aeroplanes and in train stations or bookstores or coffee shops. So it doesn't necessarily rely on somebody being an extrovert and a social butterfly, as in the character socialite Samantha. In fact, it just relies on being yourself and being able to be available to connect, to take the risk, to connect with others.
Excellent. Now, what are some other things that would hold people back from actually making the most of networking, or what are some of the myths about networking that that you can actually help people overcome so they can actually make more use of this this way of coming together?
I think there's a few. I think the top one we've covered already, which is networking is manipulative. You know, I need to ask something, and how will they react when I give something? What I found is that the best networkers realize that it's a relational activity that's built on trust, and they know that if you were manipulated, i.e. somebody took something, and the response is you wouldn't want to be, you know, in that relationship again, or you wouldn't continue it, and you wouldn't want to nurture it. So the best networkers know that it's not about just taking or just giving, but that you're about building mutual reciprocal relationships. So I'd say true networking has nothing to do with manipulation, but everything to do about building trust and building relationships. And I think Stephen Covey, if some of the listeners have read about the emotional bank account, knowing that if you're both giving and both receiving, I think that's the healthy state that networkers aim towards. We've covered that networking is for socialites. That's a common belief, and that you can network anywhere, and even online. And you've got a very good community. You've mentioned offline and online communities, Damien. Another common belief is networking is hard work and takes too much time. Yet what I've discovered, and everybody who makes connections, is that networking can help you connect to the right people to help you reach your goals much faster. I remember in the UK we had an advert for British Telecom, and it showed two people in the same office receiving a task from their manager to be delivered on Monday morning. So they split the screen in two. So one half of the screen showed the man struggling with that task, spilling coffee and being really stressed. And the other half of the screen showed that man calling a friend whom he had a good relationship with and asking him, could you help me with this, you know? And he went out with his family and spent the day in the park looking after the children and being with his family. It cuts to Monday morning where it shows the man with the coffee. He comes in the morning and finds the task that's been sent by the man who did it easily, asking for help, and he pretends that it's his. But the boss says, don't worry, I've already received it by email. So he's caught out. But it's a very powerful message in that networking can truly help us to connect and do things much quicker, and it's worth taking the time to build those relationships. Another common myth I've come across, Damien, is that networking is only for those new in their career. It's only for graduates, and now, you know, I'm a senior manager, I'm a middle manager, or I've had my own business for a while. What I've discovered is, and I got to interview about four chief executives, senior in their companies and in their businesses, and I found out the higher you go in your career, the more advanced you get in your career, the less you rely on specific technical knowledge and the more you rely on relationships to get things done. So I think networking is critical. It's not just for those who are new to their career or haven't got those links. Another myth I find is that there's no one suitable for me to network with. And you know, hopefully this call will show that there's many communities and ways to find support. And your network, Damien, is an example of that, where you've got the ability for people to connect with each other and to connect with yourself and amazing speakers. Mm. And the last one I've come across is I can be successful alone. But I don't think many people believe this. I think many people believe that they could benefit from others' experiences at some level. So they're some of the main ones I've come across.
Mm. Absolutely. That last one, I can be successful alone. Like, I definitely see lots of people starting businesses up falling into that trap, and I know that I personally did as well, where with the best of intentions, just set out to do absolutely everything on my own, but quickly found the error of my ways and just realised that the whole concept of actually bringing people together and engaging people and just sharing and combining creative skills and abilities, it really is not only is it far more productive, but it's actually far more enjoyable as well.
Yes, it's. I think there's two things. There's the old work ethic, which says, you know, success comes from working alone. It comes from struggle and suffering. And a new ethic, which says, you know, success comes from reaching and working with others in a cooperative way. And it says joy, inspiration, and love are, you know, true success. So I think we can look at it in different ways. But the fact is that none of us would be able to function without, at some level, relying on somebody else, whether it's for basic needs such as electricity, gas, water, or the clothing for transport. We are interconnected, and to benefit from relationships, I think, is at the heart of what it means to be a good networker. It's the opposite of what I say self-help is. Self-help says, you know, let me help myself, but networking is about let others, you know, let me join with others to have mutual support, mutual help. And as you said, it's an enjoyable and a life-enriching experience rather than just a way to get a task done.
And also like the concept of like emotional bank account, where there's a real combination of giving and receiving.
Yeah.
And I guess like all real healthy relationships have those kind of qualities where there is a sort of mutual flow between the two different parties, and indeed life itself.
Yes.
Great. Now, Stephen, I mentioned earlier on we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I was just going to start asking a few questions now for you. I just wanted to start you off with a question from Shirley, who's in the United Kingdom. And Shirley asks, I don't have a network. Where do I start?
Okay. So I think one of the things that I mentioned before is that we all rely on people and that we all have a network to some degree. Whether we explicitly name them as a network is another matter. So we all relate to people. We all have families. We all have friends. So I think one of the key things is to recognize that the people that we do have in our lives and that are a part of our network, and to acknowledge that. One of the exercises I get people to do is to really map out their network, to think about the different contexts of where they connect with people, whether that's through their personal life, through their work, through their church, and to really draw their network on a piece of paper. And it sometimes amazes people how many people they know in the different areas of their life. A common thing I used to get at the beginning, Damien, was I thought, you know, I don't know who's in my network. I can't name them. And someone just suggested to me, Steve, just take out your phone. So I took out my phone, and I looked at my address book in the phone, and I could see about 50 people, 40 to 50 people, and I just mapped out them. Who are they? Where are they from? And immediately I saw, yes, I have a network here. People I know, people I'm connected to in my different roles. So one of the things that's important to say is that your network might not just be for your professional business. It might be throughout in different categories of your life and even virtually, where you might have never met somebody physically, but you're in their network or you're connected through a virtual community. So one of the things is recognizing the network. If you truly are new to a country or city, you have no family or friends in that city, and you've got no contact to anyone you know, I suggest in terms of how do you start network is by enrolling in activities that you're interested in, going to evening events. There's a website called Meetup, which has free events online throughout many countries in the world, going to talks at galleries or classes, really to do things that you enjoy. And there's many free events in the cities and not costing money necessarily to be able to meet new people to build your network. If you're in a professional context, you might slowly build up that network by attending Chambers of Commerce, Toastmasters, or events that will allow you to meet people who are in a like-minded community. So, of course, you can go online as well and through Facebook, Twitter. But, so there's many, many ways to start building your network. One of the key myths I've come across in this area, Damien, is the belief people have that networking is about meeting new people. You know, networking is about meeting new people. One of the key things I'd like to get across to your listeners is networking isn't necessarily only about meeting new people. It's about making the most from your existing relationships. I think it was Mark Granovetter at Stanford. He did a study called Weak Ties, Strong Ties. And essentially, they said most opportunities in terms of employment in this particular study and connections came not from the people who were closest to you, but from the people you knew but didn't know so well. So, for example, from your friend's friend or people you met maybe once a year rather than you met on a frequent occasion. But the point is that the knowledge is already in your existing relationships at some level, but people you know but not so well. And this really came across to me. I was working with a group of about 30 young people, and I asked them to just put their goals on a flip chart paper, at the bottom to write their name, to draw a diagonal line upwards, and to write what their goal was at the top. So let's imagine there was a girl called Diane, and her goal was to be a pilot. And I asked her to draw that line and to make like the spokes, like of a leaf, for all the things she needs to do to become a pilot. So she needs to find a flying school, she needed to figure out how to finance the lessons, etc. There was a guy called Daniel, and his goal was to start a business in China, an export business. So I got him to draw his line on his flip chart paper and to write down all the things that he needed to learn, i.e. about the laws in China, how to start a business, finding a product. Now, what I did, Damien, and it's a very interesting thing, I just got them to put their flip charts on the floor and for the group to walk around. And if one of them could help, to go and write their name and how they could help next to the item on the spoke. 10 minutes later, all those flip charts were full. And one girl, her family were from China, she could advise Daniel. She could give some advice on who to contact to learn about export law. Another guy, his brother had done a pilot's license, could advise Biggins Hill Airfield, say how he financed it. So what was really, really surprising is that they didn't need to go outside and to meet necessarily new people, but they just needed to share what it is that they were up to, what it is that they truly wanted, and to be able to recognize that the knowledge was already in that room, or people already knew somebody and could connect them to somebody who could help. So that's one of the biggest myths. It's not about necessarily meeting new people, but making the most of our existing relationships.
Mm. Wow, so many amazing points. I just love what you said there about the mythology around like being connected through very close ties. The whole notion that people you know but not so well are actually the people who, in terms of networking, can often create great opportunities that we may not be aware of or we don't see so obviously as through our tight connections. And also, yeah, just even just the concept of just asking for what you want and actually standing up and sharing that with other people. Quite often, the things that we want, we keep to ourselves, and when we keep them to ourselves, we really deny ourselves of the opportunity for receiving help, and we also deny others the opportunity to offer us help.
You said it perfectly.
I really enjoyed that.
I think one of the keys to being a brilliant networker is definitely to let people know what you want, what you're up to, and the kind of project or the kind of your aim, whether that's to look at people's fitness and their health, whether it's that you're really passionate about website and design. But unless people know what you're passionate about, what you're up to, it's very unlikely that they will be able to help you. So that's, in my experience, people like to help if they can, at least initially, and if it's something, the question of connecting you to the right person, etc., and you show a genuine respect for that person, I think that's something that I found that people do like to give, as you said.
Mm. Excellent. Now, this question comes from Thando in South Africa, and Thando asks, how does one really make an impact on first communication?
How does one make impact on first communication? I think this is a question on first impressions.
First impressions,
I think one of them is, if you are going to a networking event, a formal networking event, one of the key things is to do research. Because just knowing, not many people do this, but just knowing something about the people that are attending can really be a good inroad to getting the most from an event, and also being able to make conversation with somebody appropriately. So you've read, if you're going to an event with an author, you've read something about their book, what they're up to next, etc., or even for individuals. And another way to do this is to ask the host, you know, could you tell me something about this, or could you introduce me? So first impressions actually start before an event rather than at an event. In terms of the physical first impression, I remember speaking to a headhunter, Damien, and it was from a company called Odgers, and they run worldwide recruitment and headhunting. And the woman, she was a senior recruiter, she said to me, "Steve, within the first few seconds, I can see four things, and I can say from these four things whether I'm going to refer this candidate, you know, I'm going to refer them on to the potential client." So I'll ask you, Damien, what was the first thing do you think she noticed in a potential candidate?
Probably just on a pure physical level, maybe presentation or dress?
Yeah, dress was one of them. But the first thing, I think, and it surprised me, was eyes.
Eyes or a smile.
Yeah, eyes and smile. These were the top two things. You know, and these are things that, you know, we don't have to spend any money on. have to have warm, you know, warm, friendly, open smile and relaxed eyes, making good eye contact and being present, giving the person attention rather than having our eyes, you know, looking at our BlackBerries or our phones, really being present with that person and being aware. So eyes and smile were two ones. The third one that she mentioned, and I'm specifically speaking to those from a Western context, and I'm aware that there are global variations, was a handshake. So she really commented on the energy and how somebody brought that, what it communicated. One of the exercises, Damien, I do with groups when I'm coaching is to get people to shake somebody's hand. And I ask them to do this. I ask them, can you shake your partner's hand using 10% energy? So they shake someone's hand just using 10% of their energy. Then I ask them a question. What do you think about, you know, how does the other person make you feel giving you a 10% shake? And they say, this is how I think. I think that, you know, that person's not interested in me. I think they're not confident. I think, you know, they don't want to be here. I think they're not committed. So I ask, okay, please shake hands again, but I just want you to use 50% energy, just half. And when I ask them, how does that feel? You know, how does that make you feel about the other person? So it says, okay, maybe they're half committed. You know, it seems a bit ambivalent. And I have had some people say this is a British handshake, so I won't comment on that. And the last one, I want to say, I want you to imagine they're your long-lost friend, a best friend, you know, you haven't seen in many years, and you're just reconnecting. And I don't want you to kiss them on the cheeks, to high-five them, and I don't want you to pull off their hand. I just want you to use not the strength, but the energy. You know, someone you haven't met in a long time that you really like, reconnect, and then shake hands, and the noise level in the room just goes up, Damien. And I ask them, what do you think of a person giving you a handshake? How do you feel about them? And it was energetic, confident, connected, you know, warm, wanted to be there. Now, the point wasn't necessarily about the handshake. What the point was about what energy am I giving, what presence and what attention am I giving to how I'm communicating. And the funny thing is, everybody, I never gave them the words, but they formed their own impression of the person that was connecting with them based on just that piece of physical touch, that piece of contact. And they were very different from, you know, people who are confident to people who don't want to be there, they don't like me, and they're not interested. So it's just an interesting observation in terms of how are we carrying our energy, whether that's in a handshake or whether that's in a walk or whether that's even just being present to another person. And just to be more aware of that, because we do this so unconsciously without even thinking, you know, you might shake some hand, not even aware of your level of energy. So it's just something to bring awareness to. And the last one that she looked for was shoes. And when I told a group of, I was speaking to a network, a women's network in a major consultancy, when I said the shoes, and the partner was very pleased. She said, "Stephen, now you've given us an excuse to go shopping. it wasn't having expensive shoes. The point was, are they clean?
Right.
Clean and well kept, because that conveys another message too. So that's just anecdotal, but I think the key message I want to get across is first impressions is things that you can manage, i.e. your eyes, your smile, your touch, your handshake, and your presence and your energy. And the second aspect is, in the first impression, are you the first one to start the conversation? Often we wait for people to come to us, but have you ever noticed that if somebody came to you and actually initiated the conversation, you tend to think that they're the more confident person. And that might not be the case, but that's an actual thing. If someone has the confidence to to introduce themselves to you. So one of the things to make a positive first impression is to take the risk to be the initiator. Now, you know, what do you say? How do you strike a conversation with somebody that you've just met or that you don't know? And I was interested in this question, and I looked at a study where they had married couples and in long-term relationships, and they asked them a question: do you remember the first words your sweetheart said to you? Do you remember the first words your partner said to you? And I asked the group, what percentage of couples do you think remember the first words? Damien, can you take a guess?
Well, I guess that maybe 50%.
50. You're a romantic, Damien, because the general response is quite low. You know, some people say 10, some people say 30.
All right.
And the actual percentage was something close to 2%.
Oh,
and
my God.
That's even lower because, incidentally, the first words and the reason why is that they were non-consequential. They
right.
were things like, you know, what do we say to someone? We don't say, have you got the time? Do you want to see? Is the bus late? And it's not necessarily a mind, you know, a recordable and a eureka moment. In fact, that can seem false if we start a conversation with a statement that's mind-blowing and memorable, rather that it's just something simple. And the point from this study that I learned is that in making a first impression and starting a conversation doesn't need to be something witty and something memorable. It just needs to be something simple that connects you with the person. And it could be something like, have you got the time? Have you been to this event before? How do you know Damien? How did you come to hear about this event? The most common topic in Britain when people meet is the weather, because this is one thing that we share. So the only thing I would say here, first impression, take the risk to be the first person. You don't need to say anything particularly special. It could be something just related to where you are right now and what's happening in the present moment, which is always best. The only caveat I would say is try to say something positive. So if I came in, Damien, and I came on this call, it's great to meet you, you know, in this wherever we were. It's quite hot in here, isn't it? Then you think, what are you likely to think? You might think, okay, he's a bit of a complainer, or he's a bit of a whinger. So if you're making conversation, then keep it positive. And so that's really some few tips, Damien, in terms of making a first impression, a positive first impression.
Excellent practical advice. I really like the whole concept of attention, actually. I'm actually reading a book at the moment, and the author actually says the greatest gift that we can ever give both ourselves and to other people is our unobstructed attention. So just being with people and being really present for them is just such a tremendous gift to give.
Yes.
Great. Now, this question actually comes from Phil in Sweden. And Phil asks, Stephen, when I hear networking, I just think that this is only for business people and bankers. As an artist, I tend to shut off when I hear what I think of as left-brain words. But I'm interested, how can networking work for someone who doesn't go to meetings all the time or even have an office?
I resonate with Phil's question. Damien, I don't have an office. I work from home, and I consider myself creative. I'm not a banker. And one of the things that really I hope that from this call so far, Phil, if you're listening on the call, is, you know, to think networking has nothing necessarily to do with business. It has everything to do with relationships, has everything to do with creativity, has everything to do with connecting people and creating something new. So I'd like you to take away the definition that I gave earlier, and perhaps the, you know, networking being about the art of making friends or the art of creating value through relationships. That might be another one that resonates more with your creative industry. So I'd really reframe the concept of networking based on the earlier, what we said earlier on the call.
Mm.
And I think also to get across that networking doesn't necessarily need to happen at formal events. It can happen anywhere and everywhere. And anywhere that you can meet people is an opportunity to network.
Brilliant. Good advice. Now, this one along the lines of actually starting a business, and I know lots of listeners are actively running their own businesses or actually setting up businesses. And this one actually comes from Jane in the UK. And Jane asks, "Hi, Stephen and Damien. I'm getting my health coaching practice off the ground and offering a one-day weight control workshop in Kent. I'm just stuck on how to get it out there and considering the option of standing on a street corner, but it's a tricky one, as in who to approach, if you know what I mean. I want to help people change their relationship with food without losing their love of it. In fact, they'll be freer to love it without the emotional turmoil that used to accompany their habits. But really, I just want to know how to reach my ideal market better and quicker. Hope this makes sense."
Then one thing that comes across is Jane's passion for her topic of helping people in this market. So I think that's one of the key ingredients. Jane, I really like to say, will make you successful, and I think will draw and attract people to you. I think one of the most successful qualities about networkers is that, you know, there's a purpose, and that enables them to connect with others. I think in terms of your specific question, I would say one of the key things is to become an expert and to become known as an expert in your area. And this isn't as difficult as it sounds. There's different ways to do it. One of the ways is to start writing free articles for magazines or online or student magazines. But to start writing free articles, newsletters, etc., you could either do it as a free newsletter on your website or offer it to magazines, etc., and industry press. I think I started out doing that just by writing articles for student magazines, and it was picked up on e-newsletters. There's hundreds of e-newsletters, so they're always looking for content. So it's really to start getting your name out there, because one of the common things that we think about networking is it's about who you know, but it is not necessarily about who you know, because you're limited by the amount of people you know, but it's who knows you and how can you get your name out to a wider audience. So say start writing articles for industry press. Another idea that I've come across is to join an industry forum. So if there's forums related to, for example, British Association of Nutrition and Health, BANT, or there might be other organisations that focus on the particular topic. Start joining those, maybe volunteer on one of those as on the board. I think doing voluntary work and joining committees and boards broadly and widely opens up your network. I used to be on the board of a City of Westminster College in London. I wasn't working in the field, but it gave me a huge interest and huge network in the field of education and in learning, which proved valuable later on. So think about, what are the volunteering committees and boards that you could join in the field of weight loss, the field of health, and in your particular business area? And another area is to speak at conferences, try to speak at events. So it might take some research on the web to find the right ones, but it's always a good opportunity and a good practice to speak to groups, because, again, this will draw in business to you. And the last tip I would give is, you know, really join, if you can't join an industry forum, maybe think about starting one. Think about starting one for your particular niche. So I remember about 7 years ago, I was working in the field of diversity and inclusion, looking at issues of disability, and I wanted to be known in that area. And I literally got different organizations together, invited them to a meeting, and created a forum. And that instantly gave me some credibility and visibility, but allowed people to make new connections and allowed some breakthrough work to happen by collaboration. So you could either join a forum or you can start one. And I think, Damien, you gave the example of Web Wednesdays that you started. So, again, you attract people to you, potential clients, by increasing your profile in these ways. So there are a few suggestions, Jane.
Excellent. They're great tips. Now, I just want to actually squeeze one more question in, Stephen. I know many people actually are very good at actually making that initial contact or initial connection, but then fall down in actually building the relationship beyond the first meeting. And this question actually comes from Lucille in South Africa. And Lucille asks, like, how do you gain trust when networking so that people are open to continue the relationship beyond that initial meeting?
I think, it's not only during, but it's also before, during and after. So I think a big matter of trust is that we often think we need to go directly to the person we're trying to connect with, but actually this cannot be successful. I think they've looked at statistics in terms of people making connections, and if people try to connect directly with somebody, they're likely, let's say, to have a response if it's a cold, let's say, cold email 5% of the time. If they mention somebody's name that the person knows, 20% of the time. But if they actually go through somebody, so for example, Damien, you connect me directly in an email to somebody that I want to be connected with, there's a 50% response rate. It goes up dramatically.
Wow.
So trust happens by trying to find who are the connectors that you know in your network, who are the people that could connect you to somebody that you want to know. And this builds trust even before you've made a physical connection with somebody. The second point is how you build trust is by being real and not being in a way too perfect. And I know this is a funny thing to say, and we recently had it illustrated in Britain where we had a TV show, and I don't know if you watch The Apprentice, Damien,
right.
But there was a candidate called Kate Walsh, and she got through to the final, and she wasn't chosen. That was a surprise for everybody. And the reason she wasn't chosen was that the response was, you're too perfect. There's something about vulnerability, and there's something about being ourselves that builds trust. It's about when we're appropriately vulnerable. And by vulnerable, I mean that we are real, we're humanizing, and we show that people can relate to us. That actually revealing those weaknesses builds that trust rather than coming in too perfect. And the last one is when you're following up, keep your promises. Be consistent. If you say you're going to send something to somebody, then do it. And this helps build trust as well and rapport. So I think those are the key things in terms of building trust.
Well, we've come to the end of our hour, Stephen, and look, I'd just like to say that I've taken so many notes this evening, and then even like having run my own networking club myself, and I could actually consider myself to be an experienced networker, I've actually taken away some real gems this evening in terms of how to really improve my own networking abilities. You know, I just really wanted to say thank you, and I guess there's lots of people on the call this evening that would have really resonated with your wisdom and your message as well. And I was just wondering if you could actually share how people could stay in touch with you and perhaps how they can also get a hold of your book and whether you've got any events coming up as well.
Sure. One of the ways, Damien, is that they can visit my website, which is www.brilliantnetworking.net, and they'll be able to access free newsletters on that website. And also links. There's a link to your site, Damien, and a link to other useful sites that I found be helpful to me in terms of developing networking skills. There's also a link to the book from that website, and listeners can contact me. I'm thinking of offering the first one-day public workshop in February 2010. So if they're interested, they can email me on that website, and all my contact details are also there. Damien, I'd just like to finish by saying something about I wasn't always an author, and I've been working full time actually for a charity, and the way I became an author is really for me an example of just making a networking, making connections. I literally, do I have time to tell that in 1 or 2 minutes?
Absolutely, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, literally I thought I was working for a charity, and I always heard their persistent complaint that there's a lack of positive role models from people from different countries living in Britain. And for me, that wasn't true, because I knew many people who were inspiring. It's just that their stories were probably not told. So I set about, when I hear a complaint again and again, I decided to just take some action. So I thought, how do I write a book when I've got no experience doing this? So I literally found somebody who had written a book on the internet, and I emailed him, and I said, would you be able to meet for coffee? Now, again, this is an example of the networking principle. Unless we ask, it's unlikely that we'll can receive. And so there's a risk that he could have said no, but I would have lost nothing. And he said yes. So I met him in Angel, Islington, which is in central London for the listeners abroad. I used to meet at a coffee shop. And this gentleman, he was in his mid-20s, so very young. And I asked, how did you become a published author? And his publisher was one of the biggest publishers, Penguin, Pierce and Prentice Hall. And I said, do you have connections in publishing? Do you have family there? He said, no, I just sent an email to the publisher saying, I have a good idea, will you meet me for coffee? So I said, it can't be that easy. So I went home to the office, and literally I sent an email to the publisher, and I said, would you meet me for coffee? I have a good idea. Now, again, a principle of networking is, if you ask, you know, you won't know unless you ask. So I asked, and the response was, yes, I'll meet you for coffee. So I met this publisher on the fourth floor of an Army and Navy department store in Victoria, in central London. And I said, I've got a great idea to do this book. Will you publish? She said, Stephen, you do know that we're a business publisher, don't you? And I said, yes, I do, but this is an important book. So she said to me, if you sell 1,000 books, we'll publish. And so how do you sell 1,000 books you haven't written? So it was a dilemma. But Damien, to cut the long story short, is eventually I couldn't find somebody to... I found somebody to buy 1,000, and then they said I needed to sell 4,000. And I didn't have any way to do this. And I was in a lunch queue in Old Street in central London, and a man had a cold, and he was sneezing, and people were avoiding him. And this was before the days of swine flu and bird flu, but he just had a cold, and everybody was avoiding him. So I started talking to him and said, you know, his name was Angelo, he was interested in the symphony orchestra, he had two children. And then he said, what are you interested in? So I shared, and again, that was the principle we covered on the call, I'm passionate about finishing my book. And he said, do you know, my manager's interested in that topic. So I asked, could I meet your manager? Now, I met his manager, and his manager sponsored the 3,000 copies I needed. And before I finished my book, 6,000 books were sponsored free for schools throughout the UK. But the point is this. Networking isn't about going to a special event. Or networking can happen in the lunch queue. It's about taking the risk to connect and being able to recognize that, you know, what opportunity could happen. So it's not something that is in the business domain, but it's in the human domain of relationship. So I'd like everybody, just listeners, to really think about what's possible if you really share what it is that you want, if you connect others to help them achieve their goals, and how much richer our lives will be.
Well, thanks so much, Stephen. Like, you've certainly revealed the real human side of actually coming together, and I just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you wholeheartedly for actually bringing this work to the world, particularly at this time in our collective history, where we are really waking up to the whole fact that we are in fact connected, regardless of race, culture, creed, geography. It's a really important time for us all to just recognise that we're all sharing this human experience together, and I just really wanted to honour you and thank you very much for all the work that you've done to bring the world one step closer together.
My pleasure. Thanks, Damien.
And I also wanted to thank each and every single one of you at home this evening. Your active participation in our calls on a weekly basis really is something that's very, very dear to us, that people you should meet, certainly very dear to me. And I love receiving your questions in each week, and I also love receiving your feedback after the call. So just wanted to thank you and honour you all at home, and wish you well for the rest of your week, and look forward to actually having you all on a peopleyoushouldmeet.com call again soon. And thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. Bye now. Thank you. Everybody.